Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Ham Nation, episode 37 for February 28th, 2012. The Orlando Hamcation.
Hello there, Ham Nation. I'm Gary Pierce, KN4AQ, and I am down here at the Orlando Hamcation. All these people are waiting to get inside. Hey, everybody, let's hear it.
Ham Nation is on the air!
Thank you, everybody. Have a good show.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Ham Nation, the show where we talk about amateur radio, communications, electronics, and basically just whatever's on our mind. Bob is out this week. He's on the road, and that means that Gordon West and I will be commandeering the frequency for the next hour. So, you know, we're going to have a lot of fun here. Got a lot of things lined up. So let's go now live to Gordo in Costa Mesa.
Well, thank you, George, and good to see you in the chat room. Hi to everybody. And we've got some exciting things happening all this month in March. March 17th, we're going to be doing some videoing up at the M Squared antenna folks, getting together with their one-day antenna party. And Amateur Electronics Supply, we're hoping to see many of the Ham Nation viewers there on March 30 and 31. And I think Cheryl, aren't you going to be at AES in March? Go ahead, Cheryl.
Hey, good evening, everyone. I just wanted to say hi to everybody in the chat room and a fine good evening to George and also Gary and to Amanda. Yes, I do actually plan on being at AES Superfest on the 31st. I think it runs 2 days, but the Saturday is when I would be there. And it looks like it'll be a great time there. They have some great forums and you'll be there, right, Gordo?
I will. Yep. Friday and Saturday. Actually starts Friday afternoon. So Ham Nation viewers, if you're in that neck of the woods, we'd sure like to see you at Amateur Electronics Supplies Big Superfest. And it's going to be a good one. And we've had some requests from the chat room to talk about mobiles. So a little later on during the show, we're going to look at mobile antenna mounting brackets. We're going to see what goes wrong when they break and your antenna ends up halfway down the street. So a lot of neat things happening tonight. So, George, I'll go back to you. And what's new, George, in your neck of the woods? Go ahead.
Well, it's been a warm February here. I noticed the yellow dust already on the vehicles out there yesterday, so things are pollinating around here. We've got some good Hamfest coming up here too, Gordon. This weekend is going to be the Birmingham Hamfest over in Birmingham, Alabama. And then later this year in August, we've got the big Hamfest in the South, and that's the Huntsville Hamfest. That always draws a big crowd. I'm going to try to be there this year. And, of course, we have Dayton on this side of the U.S., and don't know if I'm going to make that one yet, but I'm sure going to try to. And I think Gary's going to have some video for us here in a little bit on another Ham Fest way down south.
All right, Gary, why don't you go ahead and take it away? And Gary was nice enough to do one heck of a show for the KN4AQ Special Orlando representation of Ham Nation. So, Gary, let's roll Orlando, but why don't you preview and let us know what we're going to see? Go ahead, Gary.
All right, Gordon, good to see you guys again, everybody out there at Ham Nation. It's true, Orlando in mid-February is a Ham Fest that probably has claim to being the second largest Ham Fest in the country. Kind of hard to tell. But we can take a look. I've got a few minutes worth of video from the Orlando Hamcation. And Alex, if you're ready to roll, stand by and watch Orlando.
The Hamcation is located a little bit west of downtown Orlando at the Central Florida Fair. And it opens at noon on Friday, This is HamFest Chairman Peter Myers, okay. AI4KM.
Okay, again, vendors, we have now the official opening. I have close to me Bob Inderbitsen and Q1R. He's from the ARO headquarters.
Vendors, start your engines. Let the games begin.
Good job, Bob.
Now, the HamFest starts at noon on Friday, and it's just a little bit afternoon now. You saw the opening. It's scheduled to rain substantially across the weekend, which is too bad for the flea market, but we thought we'd get out here now, and it's actually pretty nice. The flea market itself is in a great big long line, kind of unusual, but it just kind of stretches as far as the eye can see down there. Let's go see if we can find something interesting. This is an unusual place to put an HF antenna. What's the deal?
Okay, I used to install many antennas in my mobile cars and my mobile vans. And in this car, it was so difficult to put in the back because I don't have something if I put a hitch. And I found it to put here in the front and easy to go with a cable inside to the radio and with antenna tuner here very close. And it works great.
And you can keep an eye on it when you're going down the road.
Exactly. Yeah, I can keep it. Tracking the branches and the tree branches.
What kind of antenna is this?
This is strange. A surplus from the military. I think that they use in tanks. And this is an ICOM HF4 antenna tuner.
And this works pretty well.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, with Europe, I have a very, very good contact with Italy and England.
So I should move my antenna from the back to the front.
Try it to do it. Perhaps it's well good. For me, I didn't find a difference between the back and the front, but it was good.
About 12 years ago, we had one of the first, probably not the first, but one of the first 900 megahertz repeaters on the air in the state of Florida.
Not a lot of 900 ham radio activity. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, 900 is cool because it's back to real ham radio again. You can't just, well, recently now you can buy a radio at the store, but either had to do software modifications, hardware modifications, or build something from scratch. You know, basically take a piece of commercial gear and convert it to amateur like they did in the old days.
What's the propagation like on 900? How's it different than anything else?
It's pretty close to UHF as far as you put two repeaters together. We have issues with mobile telephones and baby monitors and things like that. But you know,
that's a very busy shared band, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes.
So how do you get away from all that stuff?
What's nice is that stuff's kind of been drying up, and everybody that's been migrating to 2.4 gigs and 5.8 gigs, so that. What we've discovered is the 900 band in our particular area is getting a little quieter.
I'm going to make my very first official 900 megahertz contact. Well, at least I'm going to try. CQ, CQ, CQ. What the heck is this radio doing? The battery's going dead. We have reached the end of the road. It kind of branches out from here. The flea market just kind of spreads out from this point, from that one long linear flea market row. I would have to say that, and the comparisons to the Dayton Hamvention are pretty much inevitable. This is not as big as Dayton. The flea market is nowhere near as big as Dayton, but it's pretty big. There's lots of stuff out here. And inside, where we'll go take a look next, not as many buildings as Dayton has, not as much commercial activity. Nobody really releases their attendance figures. No audited figures are available. But Dayton is clearly the number one ham fest, and Orlando is one of those ham fests that's in contention for number two. There's a bunch of others. There's like Timonium, and there's some stuff out west, Pacificon, in contention for number two. But since we don't really know how many people show up at these ham fests, it's hard to tell which one is number two. Something else that's interesting about the Orlando Ham Fest, especially if you're an RVer, is there's a ton of RV space back here. Lots of RVs right here on the Ham Fest site. I know some of my friends are RVers, and they talk about an RV operator's net on 2 meters that they have. So if you've got an RV, and we're in Florida, after all, in the wintertime. You know, this is February. Hey, everybody up north, you shoveling some snow now? This is February, and it's beautiful. Come on down to Orlando in February and bring your RV. So not all the flea market is outside. There is a fair amount of it in several commercial buildings, and it is typical flea market stuff, but it's air-conditioned in here, and you're out of the rain if there's going to be some rain, and look at this fine-looking boat anchor equipment. Okay, I'm not sure, but I think this multi-LMAC here, I think one of these might be on Bob Heil's shelf.
This is a PRC-6 walkie-talkie, a military in the 1950s. It's a 1-watt FM rig that was used in the field and low power, and it's got 13 tubes in it. It was state-of-the-art in its day because it was so compact. So, it's rather wide deviation, about 20 to 30 kilohertz, around 30 to 40 to 55 megacycles. It's one channel only. I have a crystal at 51.0 megacycles, which makes it in the 6-meter band, so we carry this around.
Hey, you want to do your own podcast? We've got everything you need. Got the little PC webcam. The Mr. Microphone. Where am I? The Mr. Microphone. And you're on the air. You can do your own podcast.
This is what they call Commercial Building 3. The main building is really Buildings 1 and 2. So this is Commercial 3. It is really more flea market-ish than just about anything commercial, but more flea market, more air-conditioned, more out of the rain if there's going to be rain. It didn't actually rain today, but it looks like there's going to be tomorrow. Now, you may have noticed these balloons outside of Commercial Building 3. We asked about them. It's a fascinating interview, and we're including the whole thing in episode 2. Here's a little snippet to get you interested. I'm looking over at that sign over there. The world's most portable ham radio tower is inflatable. What are we talking about?
That's right. This guy right here is what I believe to be the most portable tower in the world for ham, guys. We've been building towers for emergency management, for video cameras, and for antennas. And we've decided that hams need our towers, too. They work very much like an inflatable, like you see, that's Santa Claus inflatable, but these are a more high-tech, ruggedized version. Our typical towers run anywhere from 5 pounds up to about 30 pounds. Our ham tower is designed to lift 10 pounds. We can do, that's one of our standard jobs, we can do customized versions that'll handle any payload at all.
I'll get it blown up in a minute. I'm running out of here. How's that look? And now, if I can work my way down this aisle, we're in Commercial Building 1 and 2. That's the way they designated here at the Orlando Hamcation. This is Saturday, and as you can tell, it's very busy. Lots of traffic around me. This is the building where most of the big commercial exhibitors take place. It is divided into the side that we're on right now, a little bit more flea market-ish, but not really what you call a flea market. Back behind us is where all the high-dollar exhibitors are. And we will take a look at and talk to many of those folks as we can as we continue to investigate the Orlando Hamcation. And here is a quick look at the most commercial of the commercial exhibitors and another comparison to Dayton. I like to say that if it exists in ham radio, it's a Dayton. It's not quite true of Orlando, but there is a lot here. All the big guys and a lot of the little guys.
Welcome to the Orlando Hamcation in warm, sunny Florida.
The forums are held in these buildings here.
Another Dayton comparison. Orlando has some good forums, but far fewer than the Hamvention. And the rooms are kind of small.
There we go.
There we go. So, first of all, who are we talking to?
Finally, the interviews.
Are we rolling?
Now, I've produced several tour videos of Dayton, and we always talk to people, but we always try to keep it short, and we edit it even shorter. Not so here. With the podcast in mind, I interviewed about a dozen of the exhibitors at length, 10, 20 minutes, in some cases almost an hour.
Introduce yourself.
Nobody's going to watch all of them, at least not right away.
I believe I talked to you at Huntsville last year.
But I think that some of you will find some of them very interesting.
This is Lou McFadden, W5DID.
So in Ham Radio Now, Episode 2, I'll present all of the full-length interviews.
Test 1, 2, 3, 4.
Episode 2 will be along shortly at hamradionow.tv.
It is rolling.
We're going to add the M2 in there.
I also shot the Ham Radio Deluxe Forum, and you'll find that in the forum section of ARVN's website,
ARVN.tv.
It'll set your radio to the right mode and band.
This is your Ham Fest.
Yes, sir. My name is Peter Myers. My call is Alpha India 4 Kilo Mike, and I'm the chairman of the Orlando Hamcation.
In the hierarchy of Ham Fests, there's the Dayton Hamvention. That's the big one. Who's number two?
Orlando?
Maybe Orlando?
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to get hard numbers from everybody. Do you release the actual attendance figures?
We have primarily guess that will be around over the 3 days, 12,000 visitors.
And I understand the exhibit hall was pretty much sold out.
The general information is that we are sold out at the commercial 1 and 2, nearly sold out in commercial 3. We got just a few tables left in the Swaps building. And if you have been around, then you see the huge number of tailgaters. And we have also a great number of RVers.
How much history do you know about the Orlando Hamcation? Do you know what year it got started?
It must be started in 1945 or 1946, basically, because this is 66th year in a row that they do Hamcation. So this must be started in 1946.
Is it a radio club that sponsors it?
The mother of the Hamcation is the Orlando Amateur Radio Club, and we are part of it.
Thank you, Peter. It was good meeting you. Finally getting an interview here at the very end of the day. And you've given away some prizes, and it's been a very successful Hamcation. So we'll see you next year. And wave to the big audience out there.
Bye, guys. See you next year. 73s from AI4KM.
Gordon, you cannot nail these guys down. They are not going to tell you how many folks came to the Hamfest, but you get the idea. It's a pretty big one.
Oh, that is terrific, Gary. Well, Gary, what a fabulous job and what a great videographer you are to go out there and have so much fun. Thank you so much. And Gary, why don't you go ahead and just one more time tell folks where they can tune in to the second part of this great video on your show. Go ahead.
Well, Gordon, I've had so much fun in my guest stints as filling in for Bob on Ham Nation, but it wasn't enough. There's lots of things that I wanted to do, and I realized what Leo Laporte's been telling us all. If you want to do this, you can do it. You can start your own channel. You might need a little bit more than that webcam and the Mr. Microphone that I showed during the clip. And I've got a little bit more than that, but I have decided to start my own channel and put on my own show, in addition to the ARVN DVDs that I've been selling. And I managed to get the domain hamradionow.tv. I've also got hamradionow.com, but I'm kind of promoting it as hamradionow.tv. And I've been furiously getting the website together today and over the past few days and getting a lot of video up. Some of those interviews from the Hamcation are up there now. A few more to go. It takes a while to push this stuff through the internet to get multiple gigabyte programs up through YouTube, but they're on their way. So I would like to invite all the folks that have enjoyed watching me here on Ham Nation to tune in to hamradionow.tv. And Gordon, okay. I'm here at your service whenever you need me.
Well, that's terrific. Well, Gary, thank you so much. And you have brought so much to Ham Nation. And it was good to see you back there at Ham Radio Outlet in Atlanta. And maybe we'll see you, for sure, we'll see you at Dayton. So thanks again, Gary, and 73 from the gang at Ham Nation. Hey, George, what do you think? That was pretty good. And George, I'll let you turn it over to Cheryl and see who she's got in the chat room. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, I'm going to have to make it down to Orlando for that Hamfest 1 year. I'm not sure when I'll do it, but nice warm weather down there. And there are a lot of hams in the Florida area. I mean, I hear them here every night and talk to a lot of them. So a big ham radio population down there. So it doesn't surprise me. They have a pretty good Hamfest down there, possibly the second largest. So, Cheryl, what have we got going on in the chat room tonight? I know you've been acting as hall monitor there. Surely you've got some good questions for us.
Absolutely. I'll be happy to be your hall monitor here, but there was a comment I just want to say to Gordo. They said, I think Gordo played the drums for the audio on the clip. Did you do that, Gordo? Was that you?
that was actually a Julian, but I was there just to give him a little bit of backup. Back to you, Cheryl.
Okay, and basically there was one quick comment before I asked any of the questions that someone really wanted to get out there, and they said, the Damon K400 is a great mobile mount for your car, so I thought I'd get that out there right off the top. And The first question I have is, what would be a good option for a bud pole or bud stick when living in an apartment? They wanted to know, does someone want to take that? That you might have an answer for that?
Boy, that was a good one. Let me go over to George on that one. And then, George, I'll take it and talk about the K400 and units somewhat like it. So, George, I'll let you answer that one. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, I believe he was asking about a buddy pole. And a buddy pole is just simply two antennas hooked end to end. You hook the two bottoms together. One is fed with the center coax, and the other is fed with the shield. And by doing that, instead of a quarter wave antenna, you've got two quarter waves out there, which makes a half wave. And a lot of people use those. They're portable. Take a little bit of work to tune it up. But, you can use ham sticks or the, I don't remember the name of them, but MFJ makes some of those too. Any of those quarter wave antennas should work for that. Just use a pair of them. Does that sound reasonable to you, DeCordo?
Yeah, it sure does. And, you know, it's a nice balanced dipole. You do have to change them when you swing over to another band, but they're great. So ham sticks, the buddy poles, all of those one-quarter wave on each side works well. And I wanted to point out, when you folks go mobile and you've got this, and this is a very common type of antenna mount, and that is it's got the SO239 receiver here that you screw on the coax cable. This is the 3/8-24 threaded receiver for your ham stick and or a single part of the buddy pole. It works great. But ladies and gentlemen, do not put a major sized antenna on this, because what will happen if you put in a small screwdriver that takes a 3/8-24 thread is this is what you're looking at, and this is simply pushed in. It is swedged, and when you go down the road at 60 miles an hour, that'll yank it right out, and you've lost that great antenna. So be very cautious that if you use this kind of mount, this is what's holding it together, and it is simply swedged in. It is not part other than plastic, and it'll pull right out with a big antenna on top. And then all you have left is just the stub, and you feel very, very bad. So that's a little word of wisdom about operating mobile with a big HF antenna. So, Cheryl, back to you. We'll let you do well. Oh, and by the way, the K400 mount. Yes, that is a very special mount, and that mount will keep things really attached to that RV in grand style. So I'm for the K400 because it does not use this weak connection, but rather it uses a great connection that won't break away. So Cheryl, give us one more, and then we're going to swing over to Amanda and pick up some ham tails. So Cheryl, one more Q&A. Over to you.
Thanks for those answers, guys. We appreciate that. There was one other announcement someone asked me to put on the off the chat room. The ARRL single sideband DX sweepstakes is coming up this weekend, so stay tuned. Look at your ARRL website for further details. And the next question is, does anyone have an opinion on a Vibraplex or a Bengali Lambic paddled Keir? Anyone have any information on that tonight?
Oh, boy, I like them both. The Vibraplex, of course, has been around for ages. But the new Bengali Keys, you see the folks lined up at their booth, and it's a good one. Yeah, it's a great one. So either of the Keyers do a fabulous job. And all right, our stage director says that it's now time for Amanda. And George, you know that Amanda came up with, or maybe it was George, came up with ham tails. And I incorrectly spelled it as tails, as in the tails of a critter. So Amanda, here you go. It is ham tails from Amanda. Amanda?
Good evening, Gordo. Thank you. And, you know, tails are related to another anatomy of body parts, and sometimes that's what we do with ourselves, and we make tails of ourselves. So how about that? So it can happen. anyhow, thanks, Gordo. I'm glad to be here tonight. And are you ready for a good story?
I am. I'm all set.
Okay, you guys. So this is the story I picked for our most expensive ham radio mistake. And this story comes from Bill, Kilo Alpha 3, November Romeo Juliet. I was relaxing at my son's Little League baseball game. As all good hams should do, I took along my Kenwood FT6HT. And of course, being at a ball game, I had to have a bag of peanuts to munch on. As the night wore on, a thunderstorm came up upon us. As they called the game, we gathered up our folding chairs and all of our belongings and ran for the car for shelter. With the whole family soaked from the game, everything was thrown into the car and then was also thrown into the corner of the garage once we parked in there. On the very next Saturday, I decided to clean out the garage as it was on my honey-do list. So while cleaning out the garage, I came across the white bag of peanuts and thought, these are stale by now, and pitched them out. Forgetting about the quick cleanup at the ball game there. So, well, as you can guess, the radio is now under a great deal of dirt in a landfill because it was shoved into the bag of peanuts. The hardest part for him was telling his wife, of course. And he had to order a new radio for the one that he threw away. But he does still have that radio. And he says, and God bless him, he finds a good part in this. There is a good side to this, that I have two chargers now. So thank you, Bill, for sharing that story. And Bill is located there in Coopersburg, Pennsylvania. And this happened to him about 4 years ago. So thank you so much, Bill, for sharing. And Gordo, I got to tell you, I read some crazy stories. One having to do with a UFO, a quick fix to a radio that the guy didn't know about, and it was sold at a ham fest and was heartbroken when he found out that it was an easy fix. So there you go. Some great stories there, you guys. And for next week, I'd like to hear about your first homebrew antenna. So everybody send in those stories, and if you have to, send in a picture with it so we can get it described right now, all that good stuff. The good, the bad, and the ugly here. I'd really like to hear it all.
Okay. Well, Amanda, that was terrific. So that was Amanda and Ham Tales, and we'll tell you where the dump is in Pennsylvania? No, Erie.
Coopersburg.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. So you can go out there and maybe find that Kenwood radio. I'm sure that it's pretty tired. Amanda, that was great. So if you've got something about putting up an antenna or building your own antenna that either made it or went into failure, be sure and let Amanda know with Ham Tales. Thanks, Amanda. You're looking good.
Thanks, Gordo. You guys have a great night.
We will. Okay. And George, what do you think about that? And then George, we'll let you turn it over to Robert. Go ahead, George.
Gordo, that sounds like one expensive bag of peanuts. And also, I would hate to meet the pig that that tail came off of. You were just wiggling there.
Me too.
Yeah, well, Robert Sudock's got our weekly report from Amateur Radio Newsline. So, Alex, if you've got that ready to roll.
Thank you and good evening, everybody. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1802, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Tuesday, February 28th, 2012. With the 2012 World Radio Communication Conference in the rearview mirror, we look back to WRC 07, where a Cuban proposal for a new amateur allocation at 5 megahertz lacked support. But that has changed. 2015 Agenda Item 1.4 seeks 5.25 to 5.45 megahertz. If passed, it's then up to the various national communications authorities to create new rules. That vote is 3 years away, and implementation, if passed, who knows? The International Telecommunications Union has also announced the official call sign prefix block for the new nation of the Republic of South Sudan. and that is Z8 Alpha through Z8Z. The Republic of South Sudan joined the United Nations on July 14, 2011. It became the 193rd member of the United Nations. If you were watching last week's pre-show, there was a short discussion about lavalier microphones. Leo showed some footage of Dave Garraway, original host of the Today Show, in about 1954, wearing an RCA model BK6A pressure microphone. That's RCA's term for dynamic. These were reasonable but unremarkable dynamic mics. There's a close-up of the 1956 model BK6B. No great improvement. But the necessity for program participants to be mobile with their hands free propelled development long before. Here is today's state of the art, a Sennheiser model MKE2, an Electret condenser microphone, about $600 US list. But in the late 60s, Sony started the miniaturization revolution with their model ECM50 tie clip and model ECM51 handheld Electret condenser microphones. But let's rewind to 1936. An RCA Type 30A Velocity, meaning ribbon microphone. But we want to ignore the microphone for the moment and look at the rig it's attached to. Here it's 1957. We see Red Row, host of CBS2's Panorama Pacific in Los Angeles. And yes, that's an RCA BK1A hand and desk microphone hung around his neck in one of those horse collar rigs. This is the BK1 in a more traditional setting. In the late 50s, early 60s, Electrovoice made their foray into wearable mics. This is the model 647. And as you can hear, unremarkable sounding. The fidelity is not wonderful, but it served the purpose. And then we've run out of time for the history lesson this week. We'll move forward a little bit with another EV model lavalier mic. A bit smaller, but not much. So don't miss it if you can. And for this week, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source of amateur radio news, brought to you each week without interruption for nearly 35 years at www.arnewsline.org. You can join us at Facebook, too. Take a look. Special thanks to Chris Clemenson for loaning us another of his classic microphones. I'm Robert Sudock, WB6FDF, saying 7-3, and we'll see you next time on Ham Nation.
Whoa, that was great. Well, I want his voice. Hey, Julian, we better up the lights here just a little bit. Oh, there we go. Yep, this is that light string again. Robert's got the nice sounding microphones, and this is these roll of lights that we've been trying out lately. And hopefully, if you see right above my head, it is sending CQ, CQ, CQ. And Julian's going to attempt to even blink them out. There you go. Anyway, let me know if you're interested in where these come from. They're just beginning to show up on the marketplace, and they're great for low noise, lighting up your ham station and drawing just milliamps of current. I ran them on a pair of 9-volt batteries for nearly a week. All right. Well, George, it's almost time for Smoke and Solder. We understand that Amanda's going to be right there with us, and she may come in right after you, George, with a few others along with Cheryl. So, George, I'll turn it over to you, and then turn it over, if you would, to the ladies. Here's George and Smoke and Solder.
Yeah, Gordo, I like your light necktie there. And, you know, we were mentioning a UFO story a little earlier and Hamtails there. You could probably make a nice UFO with that setup you've got going there. Maybe that's a project for Julian next week. I do have one question for you, though, before we move on. I had a friend, Johnny W5PFR, who wants to know, he's going to Japan later this year, And he was wondering, can he operate over there as a ham radio operator? And also, what if he used a DVAP to get on D-Star since that's through the internet? Would it be legal for him to do that? Have you got any insight into this?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And every so often when we have something like that, we like to go to the American Radio Relay Leagues, both their legal counsel operating amateur radio in foreign countries. And I know a lot of hams that have been able through the league to be able to obtain a reciprocal call sign during their tour in Tokyo or wherever they may go in Japan. But the D-Star and some of the other questions that you asked me are a good question that probably we're going to let the league find out. So my best advice would be contact the American Radio Relay League and let them know that you're headed for Japan. And what does it take to bring that gear and go on the air when you're over there in Japan? George?
That's good advice, Gordo, because I certainly don't know the answer. It sounds like, yeah, since you're not on the air with the DVAP, you may be okay, but the ARRL would probably be the best ones to ask that question. Well, this week on Smoke and Solder, we built another project. This is a little kit here that one of our friends over in India is building and offering. And I did a little video here this week, so let's take a look at that. For ham radio operators and most electronics hobbyists, it's sometimes necessary to measure the frequency of a signal. You've seen my ancient Heathkit Nixie Tube frequency counter before. While this classic piece of test equipment works fine and is still accurately calibrated, it's not very portable. Back in the day, frequency counters cost hundreds of dollars. Imagine if you could build your own frequency counter and the price was just $32.
Well, blow me down.
Thanks to our friend Dinesh Gajar, VU2FD, you can. Dinesh has developed the FC2A frequency counter kit designed for hams looking for a simple frequency display for their VFO frequency or homemade QRP rig. It's also very useful for adding an LCD display to antique radios. This frequency counter project is based on the PIC16F84A enhanced 8-bit microcontroller chip, manufactured by Microchip, and software provided by Dr. Peter Halicki, OM3CPH. It's designed to help you understand PIC programming. The frequency counter is programmable for IF offsets and a prescalar division of 10. It counts up to 40 MHz as a basic PIC frequency counter kit for only $32. And there's a 400 MHz kit that's available for just $36 that adds the MC12080 prescalar IC. The kit contains one double-sided PC board with all the components mounted on one side and an LCD display board. There are a number of parts to be soldered, but fortunately, they're all through-hole components with the exception of the prescalar IC and the 400 MHz kit, which is a surface mount chip that's already mounted to the board. The project's fairly easy to build due to the through-hole construction and the fact that Dinesh packages all the components in individually labeled bags. What a difference that makes. To make this project go as smoothly as possible, I'm going to lay out the component bags where all the parts are easy to find. Now let's take a look at the schematic to see how the circuit works. The counter requires a DC supply voltage of 6 to 12 volts. There's a 7805 regulator chip to drop this voltage to 5 volts. There's a switchable terminating resistor that can be used when measuring low impedance sources. The input signal goes to a 2FET preamp. In the 400 MHz kit, the preamp feeds the MC12080 prescalar chip to divide the frequency. In the 40 MHz kit, the preamp signal bypasses this stage. The heart of the project is the PIC16F84A microcontroller. A 4 MHz crystal and trimming capacitors are used as an oscillator to clock the PIC. The LCD display is fed by 4 I.O. lines from the PIC chip, so the other 4 I.O. lines are available for interfacing the prescalar chip in the 400 MHz kit. Since I'm building the 40 megahertz counter, some component pads will not be populated. U2, the Prescaler chip, is not used in my kit, but it would come already mounted if this was the 400 megahertz kit. Dinesh says this project should take about 30 minutes to build. I'm thinking it's going to take a bit longer than that, so let's see how I do. There's no step-by-step instructions for this kit, but it should be pretty easy to build since the schematic shows the designator and part number of each component. While the soldering iron's warming up, I'll put all the resistors in their holes. Now I'll solder them and clip the excess leads. Next, I'll do the same with the capacitors. Now I'll mount the socket for the PIC microcontroller. Then let's install the header pins and sockets for the LCD display. Now I'll move on to the switches and connectors. To complete the assembly, we'll use the screws and spacers to secure the LCD board to the PC board. You may have noticed a trimmer potentiometer on the board. This is the contrast adjustment for the LCD display. Located at the bottom of the board are four dip switches and four push buttons. These are used to program the counter for an offset if you need to measure the IF frequency of a receiver, but display the actual receive frequency. The push buttons and dip switches are wired in parallel, so you can use the push buttons during the initial testing and adjustments, and then flip the dip switches once you know their proper settings. There's another row of dip switches at the top of the board. Three of these are used in the 400 MHz kit to set the scales of the Prescaler. Those don't do anything in the 40 MHz kit, but switch 1 does allow you to turn the LCD backlight on and off. On the right-hand side of the board are the B and C connector for inputting the signal we want to measure. Below it is the switch that engages the 47-ohm terminating resistor used for measuring low-impedance circuits, and at the bottom is the 6-to-12-volt DC power supply connector. Now let's apply power to the frequency counter. So far, so good. Let's try measuring the frequency of my HF rig, which is tuned to 3.838 MHz. The frequency measures 230 hertz high, so I'll measure it on my trusty Heath kit. It measures 3.837.994 megahertz. That's 6 hertz below my desired frequency, but I know the Heath kit's calibrated, so we'll use its readings as our reference. The trimmer capacitor on the left side of the board is used to fine-tune the counter. I tried it, but still could not get exactly where I wanted the frequency to read. So if I wasted 2 hours building this kit, no way. We can simply change the value of capacitor C8 in the oscillator circuit to move the range of the trimmer capacitor. After a little experimenting, I swapped the original 22 picofarad capacitor for an 8.2 picofarad capacitor, and the frequency tunes right on the money now. At $32, this kit is a real value, and I believe anyone with moderate soldering skills could build it in one evening. But take your time, enjoy some building, and learn a little something in the process. You should really visit the FoxDelta.com website and check out this and the other projects Dinesh has been kind enough to share. At the prices he's charging, I can't see how he's making any money. In fact, he told me that's not his goal. His primary reason for doing this is to encourage others to experiment and learn more about electronics, microcontrollers, and ham radio. Thanks, Dinesh. That was a really fun kit to build, and Dinesh is going to be sending over some more projects in the future here, and we're going to put those together and just see what we can build. This was very easy to do. I noticed some people saying in the chat room that they could never do it. Well, if you can solder, you can do this one. It's all through-hole components. I'm not sure exactly how long it took me. I said 2 hours. Yeah, it probably did take 2 hours because I was trying to do a little taping at the same time so that you could see it. But I'd encourage you, if you've got any interest in building stuff, go check out the FoxDelta.com website. And Gordo, it's time for the contest now. And you had last week's question. Can you tell us what that was?
All right, I can. And that was a good job on that counter. He swapped out a component, and he went from 3.8. And now you can hear George tonight at 4.2. Well, he's a little bit high, but his Heathcote counter will get him back on frequency. So no problem at all. Now, we were talking about grounding of mobile radio equipment and why we use ground foil as opposed to round wires. Well, Julian will hold this up here, and we will give you an example of what happens in round wires. First of all, at direct current, anything going in comes right out the other side. But add something with a little bit of magnetic to it and watch what happens. We drop it in and we wait and we wait and we wait and finally it comes out. So that is Lenz's law. But what occurs is in a round wire, the wire will induce inductive reactance and actually block the amount of current flow that you want to have that is counterpoised for your ground system, whereas copper foil, which we use in mobile installations as well as maritime and aeronautical, will pass that ground currents directly to ground. And now you have a good balanced antenna system. So that's why we use wires only for DC and for RF purposes to ground a radio chassis. We use foil. So skin effect has a lot to do with it. So, George, who is our lucky winner for today's contest?
Well, our lucky winner this week is Randy Kerboy, KD8JEB. And, Randy, congratulations. The answer he gave us, Gordo, was part of the answer there. Copper foil or strap is used for grounding because of skin effect at radio frequencies. And that was part of the answer. We had a lot of answers this week, and a lot of people did not get it right. So that was kind of interesting because usually everyone gets it right. That was a great question, Gordo. Now, for next week, our question is going to be, why did the frequency counter I just built have a crystal in it? We're not trying to transmit with it, but why would there be a crystal in that frequency counter? And we're going to give away this MFJ 1712 telescopic handy talkie antenna. This one is for a radio with a B and C connector on it. So if you've got a handy talkie that you could use this antenna on, why not send in your answer to us? Why do we have a crystal in a frequency counter? And email that answer to hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be next week's winner. Gordo, I know last week Julian had a video there on the homopolar motor and put out a little challenge, and I've been working on that, but I just can't get the magnet to hold up my Cheerios box here, so I haven't got it worked out yet.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, I know you're working on it. Yep. Here's what's left over to Julian's mono motor. Or what do you call it?
Monopolar.
Well, whatever. Anyway, it was pretty trick. Well, George, I know you're still working on that. And we had a chat room question saying, how in the world do you get foil attached to the ham transceiver? And this will give you a little idea. You poke a hole in it and moosh it up. And I know that the ham sets don't give you much room to make a connection, but nonetheless, you've got it there. And so copper foil, or in this case, aluminum foil from the automotive stores works out very well. All right, now let's go back to Cheryl, if we may. And George, thanks again for that great tour of a homebrew from a kit frequency counter. Cheryl, we're going to let you answer a couple of more in the chat room. And then a pretty lady right next to you, Amanda, may have a final goodbye. So Cheryl, over to you, and then turn it right over to Amanda. Cheryl?
Thanks, Gordo. Excellent segment there, George, as usual. Anyhow, I do have Steve in the chat room who wants to know, what are the best bands to conduct QSOs on AM? And I'm going to actually answer that one tonight. 40 meters and 75 meters. Please check in with the website, amphone, spelled amphone.net, for further information. And on 75, 3.825 to 3.885. I've been on that one for AM transmissions. It's been rather fun. And on 40 meters, 7.178 megahertz might work for you. Those are all real nice ones. And then there was one question here that I had for George on regarding your segment. KC0EDO asks, where does that spectrum readout come from? Because he wants one real bad, and I just had to put that out there to you, George. So if you could please take it. Thanks.
Well, spectrum readout, actually what I showed was two frequency counters. The one I built came from foxdelta.com. And those are made by Dinesh in India. He packages the kits together and sends them out. Another ham, and I don't remember his name now, actually wrote the software that runs on the PIC chip on this. And the other frequency counter you saw was my ancient Heathkit Nixie tube counter, which is still calibrated, Gordo. So you need a good counter around, and you need it calibrated. And I was able to get this one here right on the money by using the Heathkit as a reference. So that worked out great. Cheryl?
Yeah, and was that the Nixie tube one? Was that the actual NASA countdown clock? Do you know?
It sure looked like it, didn't it?
Yeah, that is really a neat piece to have. I mean, there's no doubt. It's definitely worth the Hall of Fame to have that in your shack there. So basically, I think we're going to turn it over to Amanda and see what else that she has right now that's on the agenda.
Great, Cheryl. Hey, did you get that antenna up last week?
Oh, absolutely. I've had some fine reports on it. They think I have an amplifier, and I'm getting great signal reports. Thanks so much for asking, Amanda.
You couldn't ask for more than that, I'll tell you what. It's always nice to be heard. Anyhow, I was thinking about some of our most expensive mistakes here in the ham shack at home. Jeff, just sneak in and say hello here.
Yeah, I'm the blood of the jokes here.
Oh boy. Do you guys see this? Okay.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Hooked up to the wrong antenna and then powered on and transmitted on. He's a little bit embarrassed. Also, dog therapy has cost us a lot of money ever since I got my general license. My dog is having separation anxiety. So every time I tune up the rig and I press that transmit key and I say, Roger, Roger, she runs into a corner and starts trying to eat her tail. Oh, bless her heart. She's right here. Of course, she doesn't do that, you guys.
Isn't that great? Well, Cheryl, we've got a replacement tail, so if that pooch of yours is still chomping away at its tail, we've got tails for you. Well, that is great. Well, we'll have to remember that for those of you with pets. Something we're going to be reviewing next week from W5TXR Electronic Labs. For those of you wanting to integrate your ham set over to your computer, here's a device that's got a lot of capabilities to it. We're going to be reviewing that. And we have also, for those of you going mobile, capabilities of a mobile 12-volt DC source that your alternator knows which battery to charge up first. And when you turn the alternator off, turn your car off, it knows which way to pull current out of the reserve battery rather than your main battery. And that comes from Ham Source, www.hamsource.com. And that's John O-L-O on the East Coast that comes up with that great great products. So you hams keep developing these great products. These are one-man shows that are producing some of this neat stuff, and that is what ham radio is all about. Well, Cheryl, you did a great job on the chat room, and Amanda with your ham tales. Thanks so much. And let's see if Julian has anything. Julian's watching the chat room. He's getting ready for Dayton. He'll be there doing the video for the Dayton Hamvention. So, George, I'm going to turn it back to you. By the way, everybody, Bob is with Peter Frampton tonight, and he's built a lot of the equipment that they use on stage. So that's where Bob is, but he'll be back beginning next week. The Ides of March, we've got QRZ coming. That's Fred. He will be there. Congratulations to Hannah, KJ6UOL, brand new hamster, pretty lady. Yay, Hannah. And Julian's going to marry her just for that in about a month from now. So congratulations, Hannah, on your new call sign. And you heard Cheryl and Amanda giving you a warm welcome. And we are going to Tim Allen's set on March 20th. And we're going to be operating, and we'll give you the frequencies and how to tune us in. But we'll be right there, last man standing. So here is the last man standing. Actually, he's sitting, and that's George. George, take it away.
Okay, Gordo. And, you know, really, I thought about it, and then I didn't write it down. I forgot about it. We should have had next week's contest be sort of like one we had when you were traveling so much. We could have done Where in the World is Bob Heil?
Yeah, but that's right.
I didn't think about that in time. Anyway, I need to make a quick clarification on the question earlier about the spectrum display. Yeah, there was a spectrum display at the beginning of the Smoke and Solder segment. That came from HDSDR software, which I use in conjunction with my radio over here and a small software-defined receiver kit. We'll talk more about that one day. It's real interesting what you can do with that. There it is right there. And that actually was my voice as I was talking, and the bottom of it was just doing like a little spectrum there like you would see on a scope, and the top was a waterfall display. And it's a great piece of software, and it's free. That's HDSDR, but you really need to feed it with a software-defined radio. However, you can feed just straight audio out of your radio into a sound card and get some display functions with that as well. Tonight's net, I believe, on 40 meters is going to be, I think they said, 7.268, a 40-meter lower sideband. Echo Link is on star, we drop in star, and Echo Link node number is 355-800. The D-Star net will be on reflector 14, module C. And if you want to listen online, you can go to wx4adx.com/listen. And we got just a minute left here. Cheryl, have you got one last question for us?
Oh, I just wanted to say that K9LPK and myself, we will be on 3850 megahertz or plus or minus 3 kilohertz after the show to talk with you. Please check in, and we'd like to hear from you on 75 meters. Thanks.
All right. Sounds good. Amanda, where are you going to be, Amanda?
Oh, well, we checked into we check into the 40, and we also check into the Echo Link.
Okay, well, we'll enjoy seeing you. Okay, very good. And we love those pink earphones. Wow, the ladies are really dolled up tonight. All right, George, I'll let you tie the ribbons. 73, everybody. Julian's dialing up the radios now. And from Ham Nation and Leo Laporte, that's joined us the last couple of weeks, we are just delighted to be on board. Thanks, Leo, for the bandwidth, and to the studio team that has done such a great job. Thanks so much for minding the knobs. Okay, here's George for the final.
Yeah, thanks to everyone at TWIT and all our hosts and guests here on the show and everyone in the chat room and everyone who downloads the show every week and watch it. We have a lot of fun doing it, and we look forward to seeing everyone next week when Bob will be back with us. 73 from George, W5JDX in Jackson, Mississippi.